Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
I think it's the best show on the air ever that has been. It's weird how good it is. It's so strange.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, April 26, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Interview on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 826 of the Biden-Harris administration, 559 days until the 24th presidential election. You can find me on Instagram, the Bob Seska, Twitter, Bob Seska underscore go, Spoutable Bob Seska, and our Patreon page is BobSeskaShow.com. All right, so today we're doing something a little bit different. Back in 2021, Buzz Burbank, a.k.a. Mike Elston, my Tuesday co-host and radio mentor of 30 years now, informed me that he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer and that he had a limited number of years left to live. To say it was heartbreaking news doesn't even begin to describe how devastated I was. We haven't talked about it publicly for reasons Buzz is going to talk about on today's show, but now that he's ready to go public, our sincere hope in discussing all of this is that perhaps his story will encourage the men in our audience to keep track of their prostate health, as well as to stand in solidarity with any of you who might be confronting this horrible, horrible disease. And by the way, spoiler, there's a happy conclusion to Buzz's story. Okay, this is me and Buzz talking about prostate cancer.
Bob Seska, plays more music.
You know what I hate, Bob? I hate it when old people talk about their maladies. but that's not exactly what I'm here to do today, and thank you for having me. I've wanted to do what we're going to do today for a very long time, but I wanted to wait because I didn't want people feeling sorry for me. I guess we should start, really, this story, the meat of this story starts in 2019.
Okay.
As all bad things did. Mm-hmm. In February of 2019, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Now, that's not unusual in itself. A lot of men get that. Unfortunately, mine had been caught late. Your PSA is supposed to be 4 or less, maybe 5.5 in older men.
So people are aware, the PSA is what?
It stands for prostate specific antigen.
Right.
And it's just a measurement of the chemistry. Mm-hmm. A bad PSA test doesn't necessarily mean you have prostate cancer.
Yeah.
It could mean there's just a mild infection, mm-hmm. which is treated with antibiotics.
Sure.
And in the early days of this, before the diagnosis in 2019, before I moved to Florida, in fact, when I was still living in Fairfax, Virginia, and I had great doctors there, it was noticed that my PSA had gone to 6. Well, that's above above the 5.5, certainly above the 4 that it should have been, and that's considered concerning.
Yeah.
So it was decided that they would do a biopsy of my prostate.
Fun.
this is not fun. Yeah. It's 12 needles. It's 12 needles that are hollow that take samples, tissue samples.
Yeah.
And you're injected a dozen times with these hollow needles. And at first they try to numb you up, but trust me, you still feel it.
Yeah.
And the after effects of that, I won't even describe because they're too graphic. But and worst of all about that test, it turned up absolutely nothing. All 12 samples, I was told at the time, had come back negative.
Wow.
No cancer.
Huh.
You don't have cancer, kid. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And then I moved, and then I had other doctors, and doctors changed. Doctors came and went. I had left where I was and went to a new place, so there's no medical continuity here. And that was part of what led to my very severe problem.
Yeah.
Doctors along the way would notice the higher PSA and say, oh, it's probably just a minor infection. Here's an antibiotic. You know, go on your way. You should be fine.
Yeah.
But concern increased. And finally, one doctor said, you know, you need to go see a urologist.
Mm.
This is serious, because I was up to, I don't know what I was up to. But by the time I got to the urologist, my PSA, which was supposed to be down around maybe 5 at that point in my life, had reached 175.
Oh, my God.
That's a little higher than 5.
Wow. God damn.
And it was diagnosed in February, March of 2019 as advanced aggressive prostate cancer. Gleason 9 out of 10, stage 2. The medicine didn't seem to be working initially, and I was given 3 to 5 years to live.
Jesus. So let's back up just one little step.
Yeah.
When you get that diagnosis, you're in the doctor's office and he lays this out for, or she lays this out for you. Mm-hmm. What's your immediate reaction to that?
Shock and deep sadness, of course.
Yeah.
I'm pleased to say that, and maybe we should get cut right to this. I am now in remission.
Yes.
I'm now free and clear, but this was a hell of a journey, and there's a reason I want to tell this story.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's not necessarily all that uncommon, but I may repeat this several times today. All men over the age of 50, all black men under the age of 40 should get tested for PSA. Pay attention to this very closely, at least once a year, because if you're not careful, it can, as with me, get away from you. Now, I want to talk about why else this got away from me. I was a sexually active person.
Yeah.
You know, that all has changed rather radically.
Mm-hmm.
But along the way, so I would take herbal supplements that were supposed to increase the body's natural production of testosterone.
Right.
And the problem with that is I was feeding a cancer that I didn't know I had.
Ugh.
Because this prostate cancer feeds on testosterone. To defeat the cancer, among other things, you must starve it of testosterone.
Yeah.
And I was, in effect, feeding it. I had been misdiagnosed. It's just an infection. Here's some antibiotics. And the National Cancer Institute, and one other institute I can't track down right now.
Yeah.
But the National Cancer Institute once described the PSA controversy, quote, using the PSA test to screen men for prostate cancer is controversial because it is not yet known for certain whether this test actually saves lives, end quote.
Oh, no.
Other studies called it useless. One research institute that put out a study saying, the PSA maybe not so important. I wrote them a sternly worded letter when I thought that I only had 3 to 5 years to live, and they did, for whatever that's worth, write me a letter of apology. I'm not a litigious person. I have no interest in going after any doctor or any institute or anything else. My life has changed dramatically. The good news is I get to live. And so I wanted to, but this is a horrifying journey. And I just want everybody, all men, to be conscious of their PSA. I know most of you, many of you, don't like going to doctors, but you have to, because let me give you some examples. They put me on immediately on an anti-hormone therapy. I took one oral medication daily, just a little pill, no big deal. And I had noticed no side effects. and then particularly, and then I would get a shot, a hormone-fighting shot every 6 months. I call them anti-hormone therapy.
Yeah.
I think it's a kind of hormone that suppresses the production of testosterone without boosting estrogen or female hormones.
Mm-hmm.
That's why one reason I still have a voice. My voice didn't go up squeaky high like Ron DeSantis because I still nothing. I didn't become female. I became asexual.
Yeah.
As I said, sex had been a very important part of my life, as it is with almost everybody, many people, certainly. Mm-hmm. Anybody who knows anything about my past knows it was important. And it's ironic, in a way, that this would happen to me.
Did it take some time to kind of wrap your head around that aspect of everything, too, on top of oh, my God, I might die in 5 years?
As I like to say in my stand-up routine, I said, I have a lot more time for reading now. I'm more valuable to your show now because I actually spend some time reading. It changes your life. I was surprised that it didn't devastate me. I can't say that for everybody. I want to warn guys, if you don't want to lose what I lost prematurely before your time, keep checking that PSA. Because you will lose that aspect. And with the hormone therapy that they started me on, and by the way, it was considered metastasized. The cancer had spread to a lymph node nearby. It's called local metastasization, something nearby it spread to. The hormone medicine only works for like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And so or it may be a little longer. It could be 5 in some people.
Insofar as it's only effective for a certain length of time.
It only keeps your PSA and your testosterone only under control for so long.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, it's just not effective at that anymore.
I see. Okay.
And so your numbers start to go back up again. You go, this is not good. We're going in the wrong direction here. Mm-hmm. But the hormone therapy not only robbed me of sexuality, but by the way, I could tell women now it's okay to undress in front of me because I don't, you know, I have an aesthetic appreciation, but I, you know, everyone's safe. Everyone is safe now. it wasn't that bad. But, it's a big thing. And not only do you lose your sexuality, but you lose upper body strength. You have weight gain. Your muscles are not as strong as they used to be. Oh, I can still, I still do my lawn work and all that, and it's fine, but you lose that sort of male advantage in upper body strength that men normally have. And there are a number of prices to pay for that. And now, because of the hormone therapy, I need to go get a cardiologist because of the long-term effects of the hormone therapy that I continue to take. So, but that's fine. It's preventative. I don't have heart trouble. They just want to make sure I don't get it. But it's something you got to watch. So you go through all that, and then suddenly this hormone medicine stops working.
Yeah.
Well, now what do we do? Hello, radiation. And that was the next step. I was promised from the very beginning there'd be no chemotherapy.
Uh-huh.
But when the hormone therapy stopped working on its own, it was time to turn to radiation.
I see. So you had injections and then you had pills at the same time, and neither one of those medications were working anymore. Your body became adapted to them. And
They had both stopped. Yeah, I don't know exactly why that is or what adapts to what.
But okay.
I still get the shot every 6 months.
All right.
That I've gotten from the very beginning. And I will tell you that the loss of sex drive happened once the hormone treatment started. I'm going to say within 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just mean like all interest in sex is gone. I am I'm neutered. I'm asexual. And that's, like I said, it's a shocking thing. The loss of strength and stamina in physical activity is rather devastating. But I'm alive, and these various treatments and great, great doctors saved me. One terrifying moment through it all. I go in now. I see the new urologist here in Florida after the one failed in Virginia to find anything. And he looks at the previous test and says, oh, well, they missed something here. And so he goes in for another 12-needle biopsy.
Oh, God.
And I knew what that was. But they did the shot that's supposed to numb me. And then they went in with the first of 12 needles. And I am surprised that they didn't hear me in the lobby.
Wow.
The scream that I let out, because it was the most intense, focused pain I'd ever felt in my life. And then he went for number two. And then he started, I think he did three. And he said, do you want me to stop? Are you kidding me? Oh. Yes, I want you to stop. And he knew to stop. And the reason he was okay with stopping and not getting the 12 samples that you're normally, as a doctor, required to get, he knew from the pain that the anesthetic had been absorbed by the cancer and had not numbed me. And I was feeling every bit of that. And he knew from my physical reaction that it was cancer. He didn't even have to wait for the results to come back. And that was the devastating moment.
Wow.
Because that's when it became certain. And then the results came back, and it was exactly as he predicted. And then, after seeing him for, I don't know, a year, I went one day, and he wasn't there anymore. Hmm. And I said, what happened? And no one would talk to me about it. Now, I'll tell you, this doctor, I described him to another doctor once as gruff but lovable. He didn't have great people skills, but for whatever reason, I got along with him okay. I understood why other people hated him, but I could work with him.
You're a radio guy. You worked with other radio guys. You know how to handle people like that.
I guess. Well, he was very arrogant, and could be very insulting to people.
Yeah.
he was really quite a character. I understand. I don't know precisely why he was fired, but I'm not surprised that he was fired. I'll put it that way. But this is the guy who brought me to the dance. This is the guy who diagnosed me. Yeah. This is the guy who stopped the 12-needle biopsy at three because he knew correctly what he had come across. And it's unusual. Like I said, lots and lots of men get prostate cancer. This was advanced, aggressive, metastasized, Gleason 9 out of 10, 3 to 5 years. Prostate cancer. And you will remember, well, I should get to this first, I guess. Mm-hmm. When I was diagnosed, I told everyone close to me, except you and my dad.
Mm. Why was that choice made? Yeah.
For my dad, he was 92. I knew he was going to be around much longer, and he was a chronic worrier, and I didn't want him to worry.
Yeah.
For you, you still had fresh wounds from losing Chez. And I couldn't do that to you. I couldn't call you up and say, I could do this for another year and then probably not. So I waited like maybe more than two years to let you know how I had been diagnosed. And I have to emphasize that no one has been more an ear for me, more supportive of me, aside from Marcia, my wife, of course, but no one has been a better ear. You're a guy, see, so you have that advantage over my wife. No one in that regard has been closer to me on this than you have remained with your support throughout all of this, and I cannot thank you enough. And I want to go over something else, if I may.
Sure.
Going through all of this, let's look at the timeline. I was diagnosed in March 2019. Trump was still the president.
Yeah.
My newscast had grown to an hour, sometimes longer. I was putting in 13-hour work days on the day before the show, and I was waiting for Inauguration Day so I could finally retire.
Mm-hmm.
In December 2019, my folks called for help, and I spent January in Kansas taking care of their affairs and putting them into assisted living.
Yeah.
Then, of course, my dad died in May 2020. My stepmom died in November of 2020. I was executing my folks' funerals and estate, and that went on for some time with accountants and bankers and lawyers. All the while, and then came the period, and all of this occurs during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the doctor getting fired. And then the radiation therapy I mentioned. I had to go in for 44 business days.
Yeah.
To get a very brief radiation. It was low dose, very brief. The idea was a little bit each day for a very long time. That's what eventually killed the cancer. Just before the hormone medicine stopped working, and I'm sorry I'm telling this all out of order, but there's it's hard to remember
fine.
All of this.
Yeah.
But I mentioned the hormone medicine stopped working at a certain point, and mm-hmm. we knew that was going to happen, and I found out that radiation was the next step. But what we also learned in that transition is that the hormone therapy had worked until it didn't, and it worked just long enough, and this is miraculous to me.
Yeah.
It worked just long enough to kill the metastasis.
I remember
It starved out the metastasis that had appeared on a nearby lymph node. So now the cancer is back to where it started, limited to that one area, and being starved for the lack of testosterone. When the testosterone started to come back up again, it was obvious the medicine wasn't working anymore. I ran the proper course on that, and then it was time to start these 44 radio. I meant driving. It's like a half-hour drive, not a big deal, but every day. I mean, both our lives had to be planned around the fact that, because we're down to one car now, planned around the fact that every day from X time to X time, I would be gone for this. We did this through a hurricane. There was a hurricane, and they were shut down for a couple of days. Yeah. They called me. They said, can you come in on Saturday? I said, sure. You know, because I wanted to get through the 44 days as quickly as possible. And you remember what it was like, because I had to drink enormous amounts of water, because in order to take their pictures and do their treatment, they needed the human bladder to be expanded to the largest possible size without actually exploding.
Yeah.
And so I had to go in with a very full bladder, and I was under instructions to drink and drink and drink and drink and not pee. At a certain point, I had like peeing schedules just so I, you know, would have a full bladder when I got to the radiation treatment. And this went on for 44 days. Yeah. I don't know if that seems like a long time to anybody else, but to me, it seemed like an eternity, and I got clear of that. And after a period of time, it takes a little time for the radiation to work. And I am pleased to report that, what are we now, about 6 months out from the end of my radiation treatments, my PSA, which you recall, mm-hmm. and those of you taking notes at home, know that it was a 175. As of yesterday, it was 1.835.
Wow.
So that's less than 175.
And you know, when you reported to me that the cancer had disappeared from that lymph node, the metastasis was gone. At that point, that's when I knew that you were going to be okay. I felt such a sense of relief, not just for you, but for me. I mean, it was a happy, happy bit of news. I can't emphasize how relieved I was.
Well, people have thanked me or acknowledged me lately for the support that I've tried to give you during this difficult time with your dad.
Yeah.
And what I'm here to say today is that that all pales in comparison to the support that you gave me through all of this. I feel badly about not telling you, but I could not burden you that soon after the loss of Chez. So I waited, like I said, more than 2 years perhaps, to even tell you, one of my closest, dearest friends, what was happening to me.
Yeah.
And through it all, I kept writing the jokes.
Yes, you did. Yeah, you only missed shows when you had to go to Kansas to help your parents. I mean, that was an incredible feat. I mean, think back to the last 2, 3 years, 4 years of this podcast, and every Tuesday, Buzz is here telling jokes, delivering like a professional, and kicking all kinds of ass while at the same time dealing with this gigantic anvil hanging over his head. An enormous, enormous feat.
The pandemic, the while through the pandemic.
Exactly. Yeah. And while I'm saying all this, I would be remiss if I didn't emphasize your incredible attitude, your inspirational attitude throughout the whole thing. There had to have been myriad dark days for you, and yet you presented yourself with the professional Buzz Burbank personality and optimism and integrity that you have always had. And that is an enormous accomplishment. It was the same with your dad and your stepmom and dealing with all of that on top of everything else.
Which I was juggling at the same time.
Yeah. It's just Herculean what you were able to accomplish just from an emotional, psychological point of view.
Like I said to you before, in my situation and in yours, you'd be surprised the occasions to which you can rise. Oh, that actually sort of rhymes. you'd be surprised at what you, and I'm talking to everybody listening now, you'd be surprised at what you can do when you have to.
Yeah.
And sometimes you know, I am an optimist, but I also think I am a realist, and I've become pretty good, for better or worse, at accepting certain truths. And, my acceptance of the loss of sexuality, for example.
Yeah.
My acceptance of the fact that I may be dying. You may recall, and I'm not done yet, I've been sending Bob stuff over the last few years that I want him to have of mine. And there are more things, and I have things here that I want to go to other people, and I found myself thinking about that. In fact, I started looking around the house and thinking, I don't need that anymore. I've gotten all the enjoyment out of it I could possibly get. I should give that to somebody. And then if I have somebody specific in mind, away it goes. And so I've had some things for you, and I'll have more. Mm. But I found myself thinking in those terms.
Yeah.
And not really grim. I mean, it was, sure. And, you know, there were dark periods where Neil Diamond's Done Too Soon seems like the right song for the moment, you know? So I certainly had those dark periods. But I about the jokes through the pandemic and the cancer and, the my folks and all of that all happening at once, and Trump and, you know.
Yeah.
And hurricanes even, you know, and preparing for hurricanes. All of this, through all that period of time, I think about the late actor Edmund Gwynn, who played Santa Claus in the original Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah.
He was a renowned British Shakespearean actor. And on his deathbed, he was asked, "Is dying hard?" And Edmund Gwynn looked up and said, "Dying is easy. Comedy is hard." And What I found out, and all the time, I'm sort of learning on the job with the jokes, right? I haven't paid my dues in clubs. I've been on a stand-up stage once in my life, and it was okay, you know? But it gave me an insight to the world. I've studied comedians and comedy and jokes and admired people like Carlin and Seinfeld because of the attention they pay to words. Mm. And so I've learned what I can, and although I have not paid my dues, I made it my mission. I just thought, well, I don't know. It started with maybe one joke, maybe two, and it's turned into a monologue now. And it's really been like being with you on the show itself. And even if there was no monologue, that was good therapy. Doing this comedy, which is the jokes that open the show, something that was not my field, you know. I think it's gone pretty well, and it's been such great therapy for me.
Mm-hmm.
It has been the hardest, it continues to be the hardest and most rewarding thing I have ever done, writing those jokes. And they're not all funny, and not all monologues are funny, but you know, you have to keep going and do the very best you can. And, I'm editing those things right down to airtime. And this was all therapy for me. It was ironic therapy, you know. The answer, I may be dying, let's tell some jokes, you know, and because that's one way I think we respond to difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it was great therapy, and it's turned out well, I think.
Yeah. And just going back to the things you started to send to me, which I'm always grateful for, especially this mutually autographed photo of Johnny Carson and David Letterman, which hangs on my wall right now. You can see it in every single one of the videos I do for Instagram and Twitter. And every time I see that now, I feel so much better about it than I did when I first received it. Because when I first received it, I was so thrilled with it, while at the same time going, Mm-hmm. Oh my God, Buzz is going around his house picking out stuff to give away because he's dying.
Right.
And I'm
that's
like,
right.
Oh, fuck.
Finally, a chance to get rid of this stuff.
Yeah.
No, in that case, I mean, first of all, I thought it was very appropriate.
I thought
there was something I liked very much about that connection,
yeah,
and our connection, and so I wanted you to have it.
Yeah.
But also, it had hung on my wall for many years, and I got much enjoyment out of it, and mm-hmm. I'm good. I don't need it now. I had it, you know? I'm glad you have it now. But to this day, I still look around, even though I'm going to live, and going, well, that's got to go to my nephew. You know?
And I will never forget when you first told me that you received this diagnosis, and in the same moment, you also told me how much time they gave you. That was obviously not easy news to take. I was glad that you felt close enough to me to be able to reveal all of that and to talk to me about it.
I wanted to tell you right away, but I didn't want you to hurt any more than you were already hurting.
The thing is that that gets compartmentalized, because then I start thinking more exclusively about my friend who is still living, my very close friend and, my God, my mentor, my radio mentor for now 30 years exactly right now, wow, when we first started working together.
Well,
the very least I could do for you, Buzz, was to at least be a shoulder to cry on, someone you could talk to, someone you could confide in, and I'm glad that I was able to at least do that.
Well, misery loves company. Like I said, I wanted to tell you right away, and so I waited as long as I could and told you as soon as I could. And I wanted to find that balance of, has it been long enough yet to tell him this? I just hated the idea of having to leave the show. I want to keep doing this. It's wonderful.
I also wanted to say, too, that I, in turn, leaned a lot on Kimberly because I wanted to keep this as private for you as possible. I needed to talk to someone, and that's Kimberly.
Of course.
But anyone else, and that was that was a bit of a challenge, I'll admit, but ultimately one that paled in comparison to the challenge you were facing, and that was obviously in and of itself inspiring.
I was doing some juggling, by the way, because there were people I'd told and people I hadn't told. I mean, there were some people who didn't get told and still haven't been told because it wasn't any of their business. They weren't on a need to know basis.
Mm.
But there were people I needed support right away, and I didn't want to burden you. I decided to burden you later, but I didn't want to burden you at the time, but I knew that I needed people to help me carry the load, and thankfully, in addition to my wonderful wife, Marcia, I have dear friends here in Florida who are really more than friends. They're family at this point, and I'm proud to be part of their family. We are, and I had them and just a couple of other select people. And God, I wanted to tell you, but I did, but I didn't. And so I had to find the right balance and just the right day to bring you that news. You did help me carry that burden. You were, like I said, the perfect support. You were the guy I could talk to about this. And so I thank you very much for that. And I'll be forever grateful for it. Thank you.
We also have to take a second for a round of applause for Marcia, of course, because she is a tremendous woman who I'm sure was with you every step of the way, supporting you, encouraging you, and most importantly, just being there for you during the most difficult times. I mean, she's an incredible person.
She had to adjust her grocery shopping schedule to accommodate my radiation treatments. No, you're absolutely right. And this was, I think the person who had the hardest time with this was probably Marcia.
Yeah.
And that's not a brag. It's just that she was really worried about things like how to run the TV when I'm gone, you know. I handle the finances. And you know, I've offered to teach her many times. No, she would rather I stuck around and did it. But she was fearful of what life was going to be like and whether she'd be able to handle stuff without me.
Yeah.
And she was not looking forward to that. I know that weighed on her very heavily, life without me. And perhaps there may have been an emotional connection as well, but not just utilitarian purposes, but she really was concerned, oh my God, what am I going to do without him? And that tore me up. That was harder for me than just about anything. And next to telling you.
So when you get this diagnosis, the initial diagnosis that included the amount of time you had left,
right.
Was there a planning process for you and Marcia in terms of, well, here's how we'd like to spend this remaining time? Was there
It was vague and uncertain. Yeah. I will say, you know, I'm happy with my life. So I could have done that. It's not my preference, certainly. You know, I'd rather be around. But if that was the way it was going to go, then, there would be certain things I'd want to do, but I don't, and maybe this is to my detriment, I don't have huge aspirations, at least at this point in my life. I'm really satisfied with my life, really happy with the way things have turned out, despite the unexpected change in my life.
Yeah.
I get to live, and I feel fine. I'm fine. I'm going to be fine. I'm getting the greatest care. I am cancer-free at this point. So I'm grateful for all of those things. And I didn't want sympathy. I didn't want people laughing at the jokes because, oh, we better laugh at his jokes because he's dying soon. You know, I didn't want any of that.
The make-a-wish monologue is what it would
right.
have been. Yeah.
Exactly. And I didn't want that then, and I don't want it now.
Yeah.
What I want is for men and people who care about men to make sure that you get that PSA checked if you're over the age of 40 for a black man, if you're over the age of 50 for all men, get that test, stay up to date on it. Don't let what has happened to me happen to you. What's happened to me didn't kill me, but it could have. It did take away my sex life. It did take away my strength. It will take away things that many men see as defining themselves as men.
Yeah.
I like to think that I'm still reasonably masculine.
Yeah.
Not that I was ever, you know, incredibly masculine, but I think I still fall into that category. I got to keep my voice and Morgul as the friendly drelb. I got to keep that. So I'm grateful for all that. I'm grateful for my life, and I'm grateful that I got to beat cancer with the help of, like I said, some amazing doctors and technicians and nurses and wonderful people.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, what was the diagnosis as far as the possibility of removing your prostate? Because don't they do that sometimes where they go in and remove the whole prostate?
They do, and every case is different. Every story is different. Every degree of severity is different. And for some people, this is not a big deal. You catch it early. That's the point, guys, of getting that PSA test on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You catch it early. This doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to go this way or any of the other horrible ways you've gone about. So everybody's different. And in my case, my doctor, the one who jabbed me with the three empty, you know, core needles, he told me right away that surgery was there wasn't going to be surgery. Surgery was out. And may have been because of the metastasis. I'm not sure why surgery was ruled out. I'm kind of glad it was. He seemed to think, and my doctors have seemed to think, that surgery was a good thing to avoid if you could.
Yeah.
And they went about other ways of killing the cancer, starving it out, which is basically the treatment. Again, that was the other assurance from the doctor from the get-go, and this promise has been kept, no chemotherapy. It went hormone therapy. The shot is not a big deal. Once every 6 months, what do I care? I don't take the pill anymore. That was once a day for a while. Then I went 44 days for radiation, but that's all done now. So now it's just one shot every 6 months and, you know, keeping in touch with the doctor. So I'm glad that it went the way it went. They kept their promise of no surgery. They kept their promise of no chemotherapy.
One of the things that I think is so inspiring about this story, and I think one of the most valuable reasons why we're talking about this in the first place, is not just to relate what you went through, but to also emphasize the fact that with this diagnosis, even when you're given a death diagnosis, where you say, well, you've got 5 years left, in that time, you can still kind of lead a reasonably normal life.
Absolutely. I, you know, despite the weird schedule with the, you know, oh, it's time to drive to the radiation treatment, or, oh, I got to drink another quart of water.
Yeah.
Aside from those kinds of things, life has been completely normal.
Yeah.
I feel great. I just saw doctors. My numbers are great. I'm fine, and I'm gonna be fine. And I didn't think I was gonna be saying that after bringing you the initial news when I did.
So going back to the PSA test and its efficacy, would it also behoove men to request the digital exam, the dreaded digital exam of the prostate, versus the PSA test alone?
Only if you prefer it. No, actually, I'm reading.
Only if you prefer it. Yeah.
I'm reading that the doctors need to do that more.
Yeah.
Doctors hate doing that.
Uh-huh.
I don't care what you think. They hate doing it more than you hate having it done. And if you listen to them and relax like you're supposed to, it's not invasive, not terribly invasive, and over very quickly.
Yeah.
But a digital exam can be helpful. The PSA test is no guarantee. That much is true. A bad PSA test doesn't necessarily mean you have cancer. A good PSA test doesn't necessarily mean you don't. But it's a starting place.
Yeah.
And you know, if you have any concerns, then you should pursue that and discuss that with your doctor. But yeah, guys, pay attention to this, because this is really avoidable. What happened to me, I mean, I took those herbal supplements. I didn't know. I was told that the PSA test meant nothing. Some of my doctors believed that the PSA test meant nothing. Some of them diagnosed it as a low-grade infection. Here's an antibiotic. There was a lot going on there. A lot of people to blame. That institute that put out that study is to blame. The National Cancer Institute is to blame. Some of my doctors are to blame. Some of my recent urologists have told me the first guy missed some stuff in those 12 needles.
Wow.
They came back and told me when they. So there may have been some medical malpractice there of a sort. And so I have blame. The doctors have blame. The institutions have blame. And all of it was avoidable. And I, like I said, didn't want to come out with this before because I didn't want sympathy. I wanted to wait until I was in the clear, wait until I had been declared in remission, to then come to you and say, men over 50, get your PSA checked. Black men over 40, get your PSA checked and stay on it year after year after year after year if you want to keep humping.
Yeah, right, right.
And living.
I mean, one of the things that is becoming more and more commonplace for men over 50 is testosterone replacement therapy.
Yes.
And I can only imagine if you had gone down that road. And so I think one of the lessons to come out of this is if you choose to go on testosterone replacement therapy, which is, I mean, there are myriad benefits to it.
There are people who
need
it,
for sure. Yes. And at the same time, make sure that whoever your doctor is, whether it's one of these anti-aging doctors or whether it's a urologist or an endocrinologist, make sure that doctor is concurrently checking your PSA, checking your hematocrit, checking your metabolic panel as far as blood tests go, that there are no side effects like, for example, prostate cancer, which can actually occur as a consequence of some of the testosterone metabolites like DHT and estrogen.
I didn't feel any differently when my PSA was 6 than when it was 175. So
yeah.
I had no way of knowing without a medical exam what was going on there.
Right, right. I mean, were there symptoms of, what do they call that, benign prostate hypertrophy, like where you're having trouble peeing or anything like that?
No trouble of that sort whatsoever, no functional trouble of any kind, everything, right up until the hormone medicine kicked in, everything was working great, and then that all changed. It's very, very important to stay on top of that. That's really why I've waited till now to tell the audience what's going on. It's not for sympathy. If anything, just be glad it's over and you don't have to hear about it anymore. But it's taken care of, and I didn't want sympathy, but I thought the message of getting your PSA checked was important enough to share with you my unique story.
It's all so crucial to stay on top of this stuff. And this is one of the reasons why we talk about healthcare and healthcare reform and making sure, because now some of these preventative measures are paid for because of the Affordable Care Act and things like that. Yeah. Some of the if you're testing on a regular basis, an annual basis or whatever it happens to be, some of that testing might actually be covered in your insurance policy, which is certainly helpful. So,
And on that subject, if I may, Medicare and my supplemental insurance covered it all. I've paid nothing for these treatments. And
incredible.
You know that 44 radiation treatments and all this hormone medication, you know that wasn't cheap. Yeah. You know the doctors weren't cheap. The machines, the scans, the body scans, none of those things were cheap. I didn't pay a dime for any of this.
Well, my friend, I am so glad that we've gotten to this place where, after you heard the news of remission, you sent me that text message, and it was just like, especially given what I'm going through right now with my family, it was such an incredible relief, and I'm so thrilled for you, and even more importantly, many more years of shows to come. So get ready to write many more monologues.
Well, don't get happy. But I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, well, see, that's the other thing. I don't know if you realize that Buzz Burbank is indestructible. I've just come to the conclusion that your whole body is like iron. I mean, my God, have survived.
I have cheated death to my knowledge 4 times in my lifetime.
Incredible.
I mean, I laugh in the face of death, Bob, because if you don't laugh, you cry. But we won't get into all of those because let's end it the way we began it. I hate it when old people talk about their maladies.
Well, I'm always here for it. So if you can keep telling me, because you know what I do?
What?
It encourages me to make sure that my health is up to snuff. And that makes
me please
be more diligent when it comes to contacting my doctor and setting up what I need to set up. So it's
then
all
my work here is through. Guys, make your appointment. Yeah. Get your PSA check so you know where you stand.
Well, you are a true inspiration. Your attitude through this, your perseverance, your tenacity, your optimistic attitude, or at least seemingly optimistic attitude, it seems to me as if it's incredibly rare. I don't imagine that a lot of people, when confronted with this diagnosis, I know how I would behave if I received this diagnosis, and I hope that I would handle it as well as you have with that level of aplomb, because just sitting here without the diagnosis, I would think, fuck, I that would be it for me. I would be so incredibly devastated. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to function.
My philosophy is, and maybe this isn't true for everybody, but I think we have a tendency to rise to the occasion.
Well, okay, my friend, this was an incredibly honest thing for you to do, an incredibly open thing for you to do, and I think
we got this out of the way.
This will help many people. And you know what? We have been talking about this for some time now. Like, okay,
are we going to do it?
Yeah.
When are we going to do it? How are we going to do it?
Yeah. Right. And in fact, we were going to do it next week, and so my guest for today ended up dropping out, so we said, well, do you want to do it today? And you were kind enough to agree to that.
I had like an hour's notice to talk about my brush with death. So
you know, sometimes that makes it better. Yeah, sometimes
you're always easy to talk to, as far as I'm concerned, and it's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm sure that through this process, you've helped quite a few guys.
I hope
at least be aware of it, to the point where, you know what, we may save a couple of lives in this process.
Please, that would be nice. Yeah. And better lives. You get to live and you get to have a better life if you keep on top of that.
Yes, indeed. Well, great talk, my friend.
Man's soul's on trial. A strange scene plays out. Oh, there's an open door. Silent in a dream. It's not God, it's only me. It's only me. Oh, it's only me. Hey, we walk the same road. We breathe the same air. We sing the same song.
Find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.